everybody, and welcome back to Hogcast, the official podcast of the 442nd Fighter Wing. I'm Bob Jennings, the Superintendent of Public Affairs, and I'm sitting here with Colonel Mike Rio Leonis, the Wing Commander. Today, we're talking to Colonel Brett Zero Waring, the commander of the 476th Spider Group, and we're hearing about how he and his people down at Moody Air Force Base helped take care of each other and their neighbors in the aftermath of Hurricane Helene. More on that in a minute, but first it's Babble Time.
Hey, Bob, thanks. Yeah, Babble Time. If you all recall, we named this section Babble Time, and I put $25 down on the table every time we do Babble Time. And the individual who actually guesses why this is called Babble Time gets to take that money home. It's $225 now, Bob, right?
$225.
Getting big. Since no one has been guessing, I have to throw some hints out there to make this more enjoyable and more possible for someone to guess. So the previous hints were Davis Monthan Air Force Base, Bulldogs, which is a 354th Fighter Squadron, Tactical, and then the new hint for this podcast is First. So DM, Bulldogs, Tactical, First. So hopefully someone will be able to pull the guess and be able to take that money home. Normally we have Chief Parks here to assist me, but he, I think, has food poisoning today. So he's going to be down and out. We already actually did the interview with Colonel Waring. It's an amazing story about the hurricane recovery down at Moody, Bob. I don't know what your impression was with what they were doing, but it was way more of an impact than I think we realize.
Oh, yeah. So above and beyond. Those guys down there did so much good work.
Yeah, taking care of people, thinking outside the box, and Colonel Waring made that tactical lessons learned about a hurricane coming through. He's recruiting out in the country at the same time and making relationships with the Air National Guard or the National Guard that responded. All right. Anyways, November UTA. Hopefully you're listening to this before the UTA. Big things that we've got going on this UTA is we are basically complete with our ACS deployment. So we have many wing members in harm's way in what I've been referring to, the Hive, which is CENTCOM, and they're doing good work there as things do not calm down. Aviation Package is going through some training to get ready for their deployment this summer. The 476 is actually having a normal UTA, where their last UTA was hurricane recovery related. And then we're going to be talking about checking the patch, raising our standards. It's a privilege to be a member of the 442nd Fighter Wing and the Air Force. The Air Force has had a similar campaign. One Air Force is their theme, and we're working about operational discipline and operational standards all the way down to personal appearance standards and stuff like that. We're an incredible organization, and we need to make sure that we are presenting ourselves as such. And then fiscal execution started even though it's the beginning of the fiscal year. We had a commander's call with General Healy over Teams, and he basically was looking at our spend plan execution in the beginning of October. So he's looking at it already. And he said, spend, 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 fly, fly, fly. We have to execute our budget as Air Force Reserve Command so that we get the same budget next year, because we typically are getting chipped away, marked, they call it, with our under execution. And we gave back millions of dollars, tens of millions of dollars. And it's frustrating because we did our job. So we did a great job, but we're back into the world of spend, 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 fly, fly, fly. So anyway, Bob, let's talk about what's going on this UTA as we prep for our next big event, which is a combat deployment. I got a lot of things going on. Got some flu shots scheduled. Those schedules will be out to the commanders and supervisors, but the medical squadron is helping out and actually going to the units to help make those flu shots a little bit easier. We've got sapper and suicide training scheduled a lot of times throughout the UTA. We got some CATM events, so we have some of our members already going out and qualifying for their weapon that they're going to be carrying downrange this summer. Chaplain has a whole bunch of events scheduled. Again, that will be on the TNP, and it will also be distributed to commanders and supervisors. The DEOC survey is still hot. This is our last UTA. What percentage did they say we were at?
I believe we're at 73%. No, I'm sorry.
It's the other way around.
We're at 27%.
27%. We got to get those numbers up. That's still a pretty good percentage, but make sure that you fill that out. It's so simple. It's a QRC code. It couldn't be more automated. It doesn't take a whole lot of time.
It takes about 10 minutes.
10 minutes, and you're giving feedback to me and other commanders so that we can make things better. Give us the good as well, so we can spread the good. If your squadron's doing something well and the other squadrons don't know, we need to know about that too. But I wanna know what's causing problems so we can fix it, because I'm certainly gonna use that. It's available through a QRC code. It's also available on the Air Force Connect app. And again, 10 minutes to get that done.
And if you read some responses that are just extremely hurtful and personal attacks, they're probably mine.
I'm tracking those. I deleted those, Bob, because I knew they were personal attacks. I understand why you have personal attacks against me, though. Anyway, so we just got great news that our IGI, so our Inspector General position in charge of inspections, got classified as a GS-12. Which I'm always skeptical of the classifications, if they're going to come back where I want them, that's where I wanted it. And we're going to advertise that GS, straight civilian position, in November. That's going to be advertised, and obviously it's a full-time opportunity for anyone in our wing. Great, great opportunity for that. Political season's coming. The election's right after the UATA, and there's some do's and don'ts. The best way to, you obviously can, obviously I want you to vote. But there's certain things you can't do. You basically can't represent yourself as a military member in favor of a agenda of candidate. Can you elaborate a little bit, Bob?
So you can go to political rallies not in uniform. You cannot, like the boss said, represent yourself as a military member on behalf of a candidate. You also want to watch what you say on social media, because often your profile is connected to your military service. So if you're out here on Facebook trashing a candidate and people look at your profile picture and it's you standing there in uniform, that can paint a bad image. One thing you can do to help mitigate that is always use the disclaimer, this is my opinion and does not reflect the opinions of the Department of Defense, the Air Force, or the 442nd Fighter Wing. But definitely go vote. I don't care who you vote for, as long as you do it. People died to give you that.
Good point, Bob.
And it's almost an insult to them if you don't exercise it.
Yeah, that's a good point put it. This, our flag and our Constitution is built on the blood of others. And certainly we need to execute our civic duties. So good stuff. Just remember to try to dislocate it from your military service and certainly vote. We also have some developmental opportunities. We're having a top three meeting and some other opportunities. Warthog University, where the chief is going to get out and make sure that we hear what he wants to take our wing, how he wants to take our wing forward in regards to airman development. And he's got some great experiences and some great ideas. I wish he was here to talk about them, but I think he's down and out. I think he had a rough night. Food poisoning is never fun. Anyway, so that's pretty much what's going on in the UTA. Last UTA, obviously, we had an incredible family day. And some other awesome events that went so well.
Can I interject a couple of things?
Absolutely, Bob. What else? Do you got some other things I'm missing?
Yeah, so in PA, we do a lot of talking about what other people have going on. But finally, we get to talk about something that we are doing this weekend. Sunday from noon to 3 p.m., that's 1500 for us military types, we are going to be doing a mass walk-in official photo session. So if you're listening to this on the way in and you didn't bring your blues with you, don't worry. We're also going to be doing it again in December because we know it's such short notice. A couple other interesting things we have going on the front page of our website at 442fw.afrc.af.mil. We now have a community bulletin board where anybody can post a flyer, an invitation to an event, a notification, of course, moderated by PA. Use your polite words, please. And everybody will have access to that bulletin board and everybody can see what's going on. We've also got a new tour request form on the website and also a public affairs support request form on the website. Don't be surprised if you come to me and say, hey, Bob, can I organize a tour for this person? Or, hey, Bob, can you come shoot my retirement? And I say, I would love to, just go fill out this form first.
Good. Yeah, great way to get things that PA supports through the webpage. And that's great, Bob, and it's looking good. So some things before I get into what's going on in the world in our future is, we're going to do the Angel Tree again this year, which is basically a virtual gifting process that we've set up. And we're going to start programming that. And we'll get the shirts involved in that. So if you're interested in submitting for the Angel Tree, or if you're interested in giving gifts for the Angel Tree, make sure you're coordinating with your commander and your supervisors. And then we're also going to be giving out Thanksgiving baskets here. We had a huge gift from our honorary wing commander, Mr. James Elliott, and he was able to coordinate that. And he was able to get that program, because things are way more expensive than they were in the past, especially food. And he was able to get our airmen help they needed for Thanksgiving. And we're going to get those together. I think the first sergeants, the key support liaisons, and commanders are helping with that. That's going to be a great program again with the Thanksgiving baskets and the angel tree. Holiday seasons are coming up, and I look forward to the holidays, and we're starting early in November. Anyway, so let's talk about what's going on in the world. Obviously, it's not calming down.
We have to talk about it.
We'll summarize it. What's going on? North Koreans are helping the Russians up in Ukraine. Israel actually struck back to Iran and hit some of their capabilities to produce drones and some of their surface-to-air missiles. So that the area that we have men and women in deployed is not calming down. And the area that we're forecasted to go next summer is not calming down. So that's the biggest thing. While that's happening in the world, we're still focused on the great power competition in China. And quite honestly, the Air Force, I don't want to say is obsessed, but I'd say if you're doing something, making changes, asking for funding, asking for new equipment, it has to be related to the great power competition and China. It's the pacing threat that we face, and everything is being focused on that. And we're making huge transformations. The Chief of Staff of the Air Force said at the Commanders Conference, these are some of the most significant transformations to our Air Force since its inception. And we're following through. And we're following through on force structure changes. We're following through on developing our people, following through on generating readiness, projecting power, and developed capabilities. So not only are we saying we're going to do it, but we're making sure we go through that and get it done. So that was something that he was very clear at our conference that we went to, Chief and I, in September. Another thing that's happening is the Secretary of Defense is going through a total force optimization review. And he's looking at the TFI, the Total Force Integration Associations, and all services and make sure they're done right. To be honest, I don't know where the Air Force will go. In general, the Air Force trends towards not using the reserve component, where the other services embrace the reserve component. So I don't know how that will go. It's brand new, but it's hot and it's coming. The Chief and I also went to an Air Combat Command Commanders Conference. And then we had some of the pilots in the fighter squadron go to the Weapons and Tactics Council for the Air Reserve component. And I would say if there's a trend from those two conferences, again, China is our pacing threat, and we have to base everything we do off that pacing threat. And that they talked about about F-15s coming back into favor. And obviously that's something that I would hope happens and comes to our wing. But obviously there's been no change to the program of record, and the A-10 is divesting in approximately 3 years. But it was interesting to see that as a theme in some of these conferences that are not aligned with each other. Anyway, so that's what's happening. The biggest thing that is going to happen to our wing other than our combat deployments is the transition to a staff and a deployable combat wing structure. And we're forecasting that to happen in August and September of 2025. And that's going to be a huge structural change to our wing. What's going to happen is the groups will dissolve, and the group commanders and group staffs will dissolve. We'll go into a commander with two deputy commanders. One would be for a support, one will be for operations. And then the squadrons will align in under them. And then we'll come up with about a 70-person A staff, which is a significant. So that's where the group staffs will pretty much resolve into. And then what will happen is instead of having an MSG, we're going to have a CABS, Combat Air Base Squadron. And that is going to be an enormous squadron and incorporate many of the components of the MSG. Got a lot of work to do. Our XP shop is working forward to make sure that transition is as seamless as possible. What we have an advantage is some people are transitioning sooner and before us.
And we've also got some experience with A-staffs.
Absolutely. We've done A-staffs in Peru, so it won't be a brand new thing. But the reality is that these are going to be huge changes, and luckily a lot of the work is going to be shown for us, so it won't be as difficult to get there, but it's going to be a significant change. Those are the big things that are happening in this UTA and in our future. Bob, do you have any follow-up comments before we start talking to Colonel Waring?
Last comment is, this is, disclaimer, this is pending. Nothing is definite yet, but I'm working on getting some family pictures with an A-10 set up on Saturday. Make sure your family is aware.
And that's for the November UTA?
For the November UTA. So you have
getting ahead of things, Bob. Awesome.
Holiday cards out.
Yep. Awesome. I usually wait to the last minute. New Year's cards are my standard, not holiday cards. So anyways, Bob, that's great. So Babel time, $225 on the table. The hints are Davis Mothen, Bulldogs, Tactical First. All right, Bob, let's go talk to Colonel Waring.
All right, let's do it.
Good morning, 442nd Fighter Wing. Today we got a very special guest. It's the commander of the 476th Fighter Group down at Moody, Colonel Brett Zero Waring. He's done great things down there as a commander, but we're going to talk about some exceptional stuff he did in regards to the hurricane which hit their base on the evening of the 26th of September. I know Colonel Waring from way back in the 90s. Yes, it was the late 90s, but it was still the 90s when we were in Korea together. And I was a captain, and Lieutenant Waring was a lieutenant and a budding fighter attack pilot. And we had great times there, and we're having great times now working together as commanders of two awesome units. So, Zero, welcome. We got Chief Parks here as well, and of course, Bob from PA. And we're going to talk about what you guys did and what you guys went through on the 26th of September down there. Why don't you talk about the preparation as this storm was coming at you, how long that was? Because I knew it was coming, and I was obviously concerned, but I didn't really go 100% comms with you until probably around 8 p.m. on the 26th, and we started texting and talking as you were about to get hammered by this hurricane. So why don't you talk about what your group went through preparing for this storm?
So the first thing that usually starts happening, we get some hurricanes already fact of life down here in the southeast. Our weather team with active duty during the weekly stand-up meetings will always brief if there's any disturbances or chances of storms building out in the Atlantic or in the Gulf. And so they've been tracking this one for a little while, even before it was a named storm, and she just had a number associated with it. And they started realizing about a week out that conditions were very ripe to take this loose scattering of thunderstorms. Sometimes in the hurricanes come through the Gulf, they'll go right down Cuba. Already is a formed hurricane before they turn north. And this one was just a big collection of thunderstorms over the island of Cuba.
Yeah, I remember.
It didn't really look like much, but everybody kept saying the atmosphere was correct, the water temperature was correct, that this thing was just going to start spinning and it was going to come straight at us. We started getting that heads up about a week out, and then we could start to see the development and what they call the spaghetti models of the potential track start. They start off as a loose fan, and they eventually start coming together, and we realized that once again, just like we had with Hurricane Idalia just about a little over a year ago, this one was coming straight for Valdosta. And the joke around some of the folks, we get a little gallows humor, is when the Weather Channel shows up in your hometown, you're in for something.
Yeah,
Two years in a row, and family, friends all across the country start saying, hey, we see Valdosta on the Weather Channel. We're like, yeah, here it comes. So we started to get that heads up. We started looking at, from the active duty weather forecasters, what the peak gust winds are going to be, what the sustained winds are going to be. And then they start analyzing what the infrastructure on base can support in terms of how many aircraft are going to have to get hangared for the C-130s, AK-60s, and the A-10s. Luckily, this time, one thing we had going for us was one squadron was already out of town, so there were a lot of jets already off station, which then helped us put a lot of them in the hangars.
Yeah.
So whatever the hangars couldn't hold with aircraft plus deployable pallets that weren't yet loaded up, that were still getting ready to go downrange, all of that had to be protected somehow. And after all of that was said and done, they made the decision to move 16 airplanes for the A-10s plus some C-130s and HH-60s to Columbus Air Force Base, where they would ride out the storm. The winds and the rain for that location looked like it wasn't going to touch it.
Yeah, I remember that storm. Everybody was freaking out about it, and it was just, like you said, a mess of clouds. It wasn't even a tropical storm, and then I think it formed pretty much by the Yucatan and then just boomed and came right at you. I didn't believe it, but it obviously came. And you talked briefly, but you guys are in the midst of a deployment.
You had just recently, supported the 74th with their fly-off. And you also had people that were scheduled to get on a main body to include 476 members to support the 23rd, not deployable combat wing. I think they're the deployable XAB or what they're calling right now. And I remember you told me that here we are, we're coming up with a plan. And then didn't the active duty MSG commander kind of drop a bomb in one of the HERAVAC meetings? You had like a hangar plan and the MSG commander said.
Oh, yeah. So obviously the hangars, everything here at Moody are a little bit older. It hasn't been really renovated. Everything's going to get really renovated to bring the F-35s in here. But they made the statement of the hangars are supposed to be good up to, I believe, 110 miles an hour. And somebody said, we don't think that they are quite up to that anymore, which then the maintenance group had already started putting all of it, because we had enough hangar space to put everything into a hangar. And then after that discussion, now we got to go back to, okay, now we need to move airplanes off station. So that did change the plan almost last minute.
I thought that was funny that the bomb that the new MSG commander dropped, because those hangars had survived a couple hurricanes in the past, obviously. Yep. So flew off 16 Hogs and then a number of C-130s. I assumed you guys supported the fly-off. You didn't have any pilots that actually moved airplanes, correct?
No, we didn't. But every time that this has happened, if they need the pilots, we've got guys available. And one of the things that Team Moody does really well now is, in the past, you would hear about when you have a HERAVAC that the pilots are all going to take their airplanes off and they're going to be out of harm's way with the airplanes, which is not really ideal for the family staying behind, right? They have to ride out the hurricane while their pilots are off station. Now what we do is we move the airplanes and the C-130s follow so that they can pick everybody up and bring them back home so that everybody rides out the hurricane with their families, which is, it's no kidding, a game changer.
Yep.
So that gives everybody that knowledge that, I can get the jet off station, but I'm going to be here when my family needs me as well. So you get more volunteers that are willing to step up and help out as required in that kind of situation.
Awesome. And talking about being as a family member, you had people that, not necessarily reservists, but members of the Air Force whose family had already departed and they were solo to handle this emergency without their family member. Real interesting. Where'd you guys go? You went to Columbus, is that correct?
Yes, we did. That's where we sent them.
And then you got the airplanes back approximately 2 weeks later to include air spares that were supporting the fly-off to the combat deployment.
Yeah, I think it was October 10th that they finally started coming back, the 9th or 10th. And then we resumed operations here on Tuesday the 15th.
Yeah, so a pretty complex situation going on with the deployment executing and then this hurricane come through. So prep obviously occurred. And then that night, I remember Weather Channel was in the coast right where it made landfall. And then their next, I guess you could say, point of interest was Valdosta. And I remember you and I were texting back and forth. And I remember around midnight, boom, the power went out live on the Weather Channel in Valdosta, Georgia. Talk to me about that evening and what it felt like taking shelter and some of the max wings and damage that you guys went through.
Yeah, I got to be real careful with it because I think it was Jeff Foxworthy who made the claim you might be a redneck if you've ever described what the tornado sounded like. Away from the funny side of that, there are a lot of people that have tried to show their family members what it was like. And on social media, people were asking, does anybody have any video or sound of what it was like when the hurricane actually hit? And there's some really cool videos out there that we found, but most of it is not the sound. The sound is indescribable. The only thing you can say is for anybody who's been through a tornado, which there were a lot of those, the front edge of the system kicked up tornadoes. We were playing softball for the kids the night before.
Yeah, the day prior, you had tornadoes.
Yeah, game ended, and we had to take shelter in the gym because the tornado passed right there by the Moultrie High School. So that sound, and the thing that everybody always comes back to is freight train, and that's really what it is. We didn't have any trees come down right on our house or right outside our neighborhood this time. We did in the last hurricane. Our neighbor's tree fell across our driveway.
Yeah.
But when you see some of these trees, I'm talking trees that are like 6 feet in diameter, just snapped in half. The sound that had to be associated with that had to be absolutely terrifying. But the thing, you would hear the wind gust, and it was a little more frightening this time because you couldn't see anything. So all the sound is amplified and magnified because when Idalia hit, that was in the middle of the day. You could look outside and you could see the trees bending sideways and all that. Now you can't see anything. And then the power goes out and it's even worse. Some of the videos that people got, you could see transformers blowing. You could see the sparks going through the air, which kind of lights everything up and gives it a really eerie kind of feeling to it. But the wind gusts, the pecans that are being kicked out of the trees sound like gunshots when they hit the roof. And you just hear that over and over. And at that time, cell service was still working, so I was able to keep tracking the hurricane in terms of when the eye was approaching and when we were going to get that initial kind of relief from it. And really, the top right side of the hurricane is always going to be the worst. That's where they say the winds are the highest. And that's exactly what came right through us. That's the east wall of it is what hit Moody.
Yep.
So everything around that north wall and the east wall is what's really going to get all the damage. And you know what? Once the eye passes you, you're still in for another bout of wind on the south side of it, but it's not going to be as bad. So you're not out of the woods, but you start to see the light at the end of the tunnel. So we were just tracking. We could see exactly when it came ashore. And one of the other things we were trying to do was we were watching the wind gusts on some of the commercial aviation weather trackers just to get an idea what was coming for us when that eye came ashore of, is it really gusting to 100? And I was watching the Valdosta reporting site, and the funny thing was, I was like, it's never getting above 60 or 70. And come to find out, the wind sensors at Moody and Valdosta both broke. They were knocked over, so of course they weren't reporting the actual winds, which I think they said the max gust we got was about 105.
Yeah, that's significant. And I remember the eye wall collapsed on the Valdosta area. And you had people that actually witnessed the hurricane eye, correct?
Yeah, it came right over the top of us. As soon as I knew that we were in the eye, I took that time to go outside, do an initial check of the house, check my neighbor's house because he's deployed and his family went up to New York during the hurricane. So we did him a solid of just checking to make sure there was no damage, no roof tiles off. And at that point, you could see all these really high-powered flashlights all through the neighborhood as everybody's doing the same thing.
Yeah.
And at that time, we didn't see any of the trees that were down. We didn't see any roof damage. Even though the backside is not as strong, that's when the trees did come down because we did have about 3 pecan trees in the neighborhood came down, a couple of pine trees snapped in half and hit some roofs, and that had to have happened after that. And the eye came across us at about 1:30 or 1:45 in the morning, so sometime in those next 4 hours or so is when the winds reversed direction that a lot of that damage happened again.
Gotcha. So probably a lot of that was just loosening it up. That first hit, really loosened it up, and then it takes down. Was there any point, sir, where they were like, hey, you guys may want to think about evacuating? Was that ahead of time? I know some of that took place down, but I don't know that was your guys' area. Did they suggest that to you guys?
They did for anybody who lived in any kind of manufactured home.
Copy.
There were evacuations for that. They did the same thing in Florida, but in terms of any normal size structure, there was no mandatory evacuation from it. It was all voluntary. I would ask my wife and daughter, do you guys want to go stay with friends in Alabama or up to her sister's house in Kentucky? But one of the things, and we found this out with a lot of people, Amy didn't want to leave without the dog.
Yeah.
She didn't know what she could do with the dog. And we found that there were a lot of people that felt the exact same way, that they were not going to evacuate
because of pets.
Without their pet.
Yeah.
And that makes a lot of sense to me, but it's one of those things that you don't really think about ahead of time.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. It's also, you're looking, these are first world
problems,
issues that we're looking at, that we stick, but we also have homes that are in the first world that survived this.
Yeah.
What are you looking at time frame wise, sir, from start till the time that you were like, okay, it's time to go outside and start surveying damage? So from the time the storm starts till the time that you're outside putting on those work gloves.
So the first look was at the eye, and that was about 1:30 in the morning. But the next, there's really absolutely nothing you can do until the sun comes up. And sunrise here was around 7:15 in the morning. So until first light around 7 a.m., that's really what I told our team for accountability purposes. I said, we will start that at about 7:30 in the morning, because that's when we'll probably be able to start moving and checking out with what's going on.
Yeah, you had a great plan, Zero, which I appreciate. Granted, you talked about the active duty not having a playbook about this, and this happens over and over again. And you're going to help maybe them come up with some type of playbook so they're not thinking things through for the first time next hurricane.
Yeah, I know decisions are made based on the suspected wind speeds, what weather is saying that we can expect, and what the shelters are rated for. And sometimes I think there was a little bit of backlash from higher headquarters on the active duty side when they sheltered the airplanes instead of evacuating them. And I think a lot of that will just help make decisions of, hey, we expected wind gusts of X, we did Y, and we got feedback Z.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean you're necessarily going to use it like a recipe or a cookie cutter, but it helps you build upon decisions that were made in the past, so you can make a little bit more informed choice with the circumstances you find yourself in.
Yeah. Awesome. So get up that next morning, and I got the impression that you had an illusion that it wasn't that bad based on what happened in your neighborhood specifically. Obviously, there's some tree down, but your initial discussion with me was, I don't want to say it was positive, but it wasn't as bad as things mounted throughout the next coming days. True statement?
Yeah, and that's a lot of what, when you say the power went out, so the other thing that started really going out pretty quickly was cell service, and that one caught us completely off guard, because when Idalia hit, and a lot of the plan that we had for how we were going to run accountability, what times we were going to do that, was all based off of some kind of errors that we made during Idalia that we just, since hurricanes didn't hit here every year at that point, there had not been one that hit Valdosta for decades. We just, oh, here comes a big storm, and we're like, wait, we need to be a lot more formalized with this as our kind of lessons learned from that. So going into Helene, we had that structure, and we based a lot of our assumptions on what had happened with Idalia. And that number one assumption was that we would have cell service. We would lose internet, we would lose power, but cell service would still be good because it was good the year prior.
Right.
That was leg swept almost immediately, and the cell service was spotty at best, non-existent in a lot of places for kind of a extended blackout coverage.
Yeah. I think you and I were able to text, but it wasn't real time. You'd have to hit a good zone and it would go through, and that's that. So what I thought was interesting is the morning of Friday, the Air Force Reserve Command had stood up their CAT and people reported in. I basically said, hey, I think there's a lot of damage, blah, blah, blah. And I didn't quite catch it, but the CAT got put into warm status or cold status. So the next morning on Saturday, I get up early and log into the CAT. No one's there. So I felt like you almost got forgotten about because there was no damage up in Macon, but it was bad. So why don't you talk about the next couple of days in the accountability period?
We start going through, and the first thing you check out is your house, and okay, we're fine, but how are the neighbors? One of the greatest things about living down here is, and we saw this during Idalia as well, as soon as it was safe to move about the neighborhood, there would be roving gangs of three or four guys with chainsaws just out clearing the roads. And like one of the pecan trees fell across the road leading into our area of the subdivision, and these guys showed up and they cut that thing into pieces, and about an hour later a guy shows up with a tractor and he moves it all off to the side of the road and the road's open again.
Yeah.
And these are just guys wanting to help. They're not official, and some of them have contracting businesses, some of them have landscaping businesses, but they're like, right now it's not about making money, it's about
community support.
So you'd see that, and then you hear all the generators firing up. So that's the song of our people after a hurricane, chainsaws and generators.
Yep, absolutely.
And then the word starts to come in, checking on everybody, checking with the group staff and the leadership of the 476. Hey, how's everybody doing? And you start to hear, okay, I've got some damage. This person's got it, but yeah, everybody's fine. We don't have injuries.
Yep.
And then you start to put the pieces together, who's got what, but there's no news. That's the difficult thing, was we're completely cut off from the rest of the world. We have no idea what is going on outside. You can't turn on the news, or you can't turn on the weather channel and see what is going on at that point. I would say that kind of caught us off guard as well.
You couldn't prep your fantasy football team for the Sunday games, huh?
Yeah, exactly right. You got nothing. Then as the words start to come in, the first day was all about just initial recovery, making sure everybody's fine. And I think it took us about the entire day, and we still had a few stragglers to get that accountability.
Yeah, you were probably at 95% by close of business on Friday.
Yeah, which we were happy to see that. And just really, the difficult part was that there were certain places you just couldn't get to with the way the trees were down, the power lines were down. There's still power lines across the road that have been completely cut up, but they're leaving them there until they can come find whoever's going to officially clean it up. But
talking right now, there's still power lines
right
across
now.
The road.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah, the road that are, yeah. Still there.
This is the 29th of October. It's over a month, and you still have unrepaired power lines. Copy.
Yeah, so those are the old ones. They've fixed most of the major lines. Everybody's got power again, but some of these downed ones they're leaving them down for right now.
Yeah, I think that was the thing that probably got me the most was when we talked on the phone with you and you started talking about the damage that you were seeing on the ground. And I started looking at some of the statistics and stuff like that with the storm. And I think that piece that kind of sometimes gets slipped is some people wrote out the storm and, hey, you got some house damage, whatnot. But it was like 99 people died in this storm.
Yeah.
It was bad. And you started describing the damage that it did on base and just around town. And can you walk us through that part? Would that, maybe it wasn't so bad, but then you start taking a couple more steps and you're like, hold on a second. And then a couple more and a couple more.
Yeah, I definitely perceived that too. Yeah. It was like, hey, we're okay. But it seemed like day two, day three is like more stuff got revealed.
Yeah, it was the day after, so it would be Saturday now, so the second full day after the hurricane. This is where people were starting to report what they needed real assistance with. And our intelligence officer in the 76th, Kevin Swengros, who had also been exec up here at the fighter group for a while, they have I think it's 22-acre property. It is a large property, and it's got the real thick Georgia forest with a lot of trees. Her husband hunts on that land. They've just got a real nice homestead. They've got livestock, and their driveway is completely through that forest, and it's about 100-150 yards long through that, and they were completely trapped in with the number of trees that had fallen. And she sent up the flag like, hey, we need help. We need somebody to help come cut us out. And another tree had fallen across the well that they've got in their backyard to supply water to the house. So Lieutenant Colonel Radican and I were able to show up. A bunch of their neighbors had showed up by that time. Again, they had the roving gangs of helpful people out there with tractors and chainsaws. And they'd gotten the road cut out to the house so they could at least get out from the house to the main road. But then we spent probably 4 hours cutting trees off of their well that afternoon so that her husband, who is another former A-10 pilot as well, he could get the pipes repaired on it so that they would at least have running water before dark that night.
Yeah.
And as we drove that, that's when we really started to see, because they live up north of the base in the Ray City, Nashville, Lakeland area up there. And that's where on those roads, there's a few times you start up a road, you find a downed tree, you're like, I got to turn around. Can't make it. And the number of power lines, and that's where we started to see the really big trees, the ones that got 6-7 foot diameter trunks that were just absolutely snapped in half. And as we started getting up there closer, realized everything north of the base, there was absolutely no cell coverage. So whereas we had the spotty kind of intermittent service down south, once you were north of the base, your phone just said SOS the entire time.
Yeah, incredible damage, way more than I think you and I initially perceived. But luckily, you had zero people displaced from their home. You did have, who had the worst damage?
One of our deployed members, he had just left, just the newlywed couple. They bought a home up in north of the base, up around the Nashville area. But within a couple of days, our crew chiefs are up there, and they're pulling out the carpet, and they're doing everything they can to help with the immediate repairs, taking care of his wife while he's downrange.
And Chief Johnson had some damage as well?
He did, some roof damage. Hannah Campbell had...
We definitely know who Hannah Campbell is.
you know, a couple of trees came down on her place as well. So a lot of trees down, a lot of roof damage, nothing within our group that's absolutely catastrophic, although the one house up in Nashville will probably really need to be looked at.
Yeah.
But some of the trailers and manufactured homes that are here around the base, there's some of them that are just ripped in half, and some of them that are just gone. So it's something you see it on the news, but when you drive by it and see it, it's a lot different. And it really hits home that there are some of us that were very lucky, and there are some people here that lost everything.
Stay tuned for the conclusion of the interview, where Colonel Waring talks about recovery efforts and how the members of the 476th put their neighbors before themselves to distribute life-sustaining supplies to those in need.